Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 79. My name is John Morgan. I am in Portland, Oregon this weekend for UFC Fight Night 96, Lineker versus Dotson, and I had to get things started early. Normally, we record this thing on Thursday nights, but I had to get started on Wednesday because this is special. I got my good friend Alex Davis here with me. We're chilling. The week hasn't even started yet. We've got some frosty beverages. A couple of pizzas have been ordered, hanging out, just talking some MMA, and just getting caught up, man. It's good to see you.
It's awesome to be here, John. Dude, what a description of our present reality.
That's the way to do it. You know, a couple of frosty beverages. You're a little more high class than me, of course, which is no surprise there. You've got the red wine over there.
Yeah, it only costs $10. Come on, man. I mean, it's not expensive wine, but it's very good wine.
That's what it's all about. You're looking good, by the way, man. Oh. You've been working out.
I'm training hard. I've been training a lot of judo, a lot of jiu-jitsu. I'm living back in Florida, so I'm right near American Top Team, so I'm training every day, and it's a blessing.
That's awesome. We should say that, first of all, you relocated. You're not living in Brazil anymore. You're living in Florida. Now, you teased me. I thought you were going to move out to Vegas. But ultimately you decided to do it in Florida.
Yeah, well, you know, with personal things like wife not speaking English and all that stuff, you know, it makes more sense. And I have a lot of property in Brazil. And then also, you know, to move out to the West Coast when you have stuff to do in Brazil, that means I'm on a 4 or 5 hour
That's
difference
true.
There, you know, and I'm farther away, 15 hours away rather than 8 hours
Get
away.
Get some direct flights,
yeah,
right?
Logistics work out better in Florida, you know. And guess what? ATT is my home. And I'm always in love with the place, and every time I go there, I love it. And so that's probably the biggest draw I have there in Florida.
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense when you say that. How crazy is it for you? I haven't seen it yet, but that new facility, Cold Coffee, our buddy Ken Hathaway has been out there. He shot some video out there. I have yet to be there. But for you, who has seen the very beginning of American Top Team, how crazy is it for you to walk into that massive facility?
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. But you know what? It's not only about the building. You know, because we started from a little place that had, I mean, you could hardly fit 10 guys and we had 20 guys there, you know, until we broke out into a 10,000 square foot facility. And then it went to a 20,000 square foot until we got to 30,000 square. But you know what? I think America Top Team, yeah, we have one of the most beautiful buildings in the world, but it's not about the building. It's about the heart that we have.
Right.
You know, everybody there, it's a big old family. Everybody helps each other. The feeling, the vibe, you know, that's what I think it's beautiful about America Top Team.
I think you've always felt that Dan Lambert probably doesn't get the love and the respect that he deserves in this industry.
Dan is not a guy that's done anything that he's done to be out in the limelight. You know, he doesn't like to just, I mean, when we saw Black Zillions versus American Top Team, that's the very first time that Dan ever came out. Everybody knew he was there, but people couldn't see him. It was like a ghost, you know. That was the first time that people got to see Dan, you know. And to me, he's one of the very best human beings I've ever met. You know, I think that he's helped more people. He's helped enough people in the MMA to fit a stadium. You know, people that weren't on his team, that he just helped them out a great, about good heart, you know. And I think that that is something that, you know, there's no description for that.
I don't know if things have changed these days. I mean, as big as American Top Team is now, the affiliates everywhere, now champions in the gym. But from everything I understood, he lost money on this sport for a long, long time. But he did it because he loved it and he cared about the people involved in it. And much respect.
You know, Dan is a businessman that it's a very successful businessman. His family's created some of the founders of the timeshare business. So, you know, to Dan, his involvement in MMA is not about the money. He's never tried to make a profit. It's about the love of the sport, you know. I guess that when you get to where he managed to get in life, you can afford to do that, you know. When he talked about opening up the 30,000 square foot facility and putting dormitories in there, I said, Dan, are you nuts? Don't you remember all the stuff we went through? He said, Alex, I've made all the money I need to make in my life, and I'm going to do what I want to do, what I like to do, you know? And so, you know, America Top Team today is a mixing pot of techniques, of cultures. You have Russians and Brazilians and Americans and whoever, you know? And that's one of the things I think is unique about America Top Team. It's its openness, you know, in a world that can't really be open because we're competing against each other, you know? But at America Top Team, you see people come in from all over the world and train and share what they know, their knowledge, you know. And we have athletes from all over the world that come to train and end up being part of the team, you know. And so I think in the broader sense, it's a blessing.
No doubt. Well, this is a big weekend for you. You're here, of course, because you've got not only somebody in the main event, John Lineker, you've got somebody in the co-main event, Alex Cowboy Oliveira. You've also got Caitlin Vieira, who's on the prelims as well. So you've got three fighters on this, but not just three fighters, the main and the co-main. You've got to be walking around the host hotel feeling pretty important.
Oh, John, you listen, let me tell you something. You can't feel anything because you don't know what's going to happen. Let's see how I feel at the end of the
right.
Fight. You never know. These are tough fights. You know, do I like the fights? Do I think my guys are going to do good? Of course I do. But you know that MMA is not like that, you know. So, yeah, it's great, you know. But I've been here before. I don't get too excited, so I don't get too sad either, you know. But I like the fights, though.
Well, let's talk about it. The main event. I think this is the main event is one that I've been waiting for a while. John Lineker, John Dodson, a fight that could have happened at flyweight, of course. Now both guys have moved up to the bantamweight division. I think everybody, even though there's, you know, all these damn MMA events in a row, all these UFC events, it seems like every weekend, I think this is a fight that a lot of people are looking forward to. Give me your sense. I mean, when you go into a fight, knowing it's your client, I know you got your client's back. I know you want your client to win. But, I mean, do you go into fights going, I think my guy's got a chance. Oh, my gosh, this is a tough one for us. I mean, do you try to be realistic about it?
John, I'm a professional. I need to be realistic. I know the risk. I understand the risk. I know the guys. Yeah, I mean, of course, I'm not as into it as the coaches, but I understand the different differences in styles and speeds and things like that. And you know, the great thing about MMA is that no matter what the odds are and no matter how lopsided the matchup can be, the other guy can always come up on top. That's one of the things. In this case, in these fights, it's not like that. These are pretty evenly matched fights. Lineker versus, so we want to start with whom?
Yeah, let's start with the main event, Lineker versus Dodson.
Okay, Lineker versus Dodson. You know, everybody's been seeing how hard Lineker hits.
Right.
And I tell you one thing, that if anybody stands in front of Lineker, if you watch his fights, you'll see at some point in his fight, there's going to be a punch, and it changes the whole fight.
Right.
Every time it happened with Rivera, it happened with McCall, it happened with that Fonte that he fought in Brazil, it happened with McDonald. There's a there's a point where he touches the guy in a way that it changes the fight. The guy starts walking backwards.
Right.
And after that happens, it's all John's fight. But Dodson is a guy, he's an intelligent fighter, he moves very fast.
So fast.
You know? And he also hits well, and Dominic Cruz brought this to my attention, he hits well backing off. So this is going to be a very intelligent, very interesting fight. I mean, I'm not sure. Of course, they you know, it was great because we were in the Reebok room, we were in the UFC room, and they met each other, and they came and hugged, and each one declared he was a fan of the other, and they looked at each other, and they smiled, and they hugged, and they shook hands, and said, we're going to put on a show for everybody, and that's awesome. But in reality, Dodson ain't going to stand in front of John
right.
to put on a show because right. he's going to get his ass knocked out, and he knows that just as well as I do. Mm-hmm. Or maybe he will take the risk. Well, maybe he'll stand in there in the pocket and bang with him, and who knows what will happen.
That's the thing, is that I feel like everybody that goes into a Lineker fight knows that they need to not stand in front of him, but somehow he gets them to stand in front of him anyway. Like it's I don't know if it's the way he engages. I don't know if it's the way he cuts off the cage. It's just – it seems like he's able to
stand. He hits people. No matter how fast the guy is and how much he moves – John always managed to land that punch. It changes things out. It slows
right.
the guy down.
It's
body shots. And you know, when you get hit in the solar plexus or in the liver and places like that, it slows you down. And
right.
when after that, it's all John's. Because then John is hunting. You know, it's like, you know, he's hunting a bird and he broke a feather. And then now, guess what? Now the guy can't run away from him as much.
Who instilled that in him? Because I feel like going to the body, he's one of the best at it in all of MMA. Like, I feel like a lot of fighters aren't willing to do that. You know, like in boxing, you invest. You know what I mean? You invest. You go to the body, you go to the body. It seems like in MMA, people just primarily headhunt. Do you know where
He was a boxer. He started boxing. That was his. That's where he started. He started with boxing. He wasn't an MMA fighter. He was a boxer. and that's where he came out with it. But he's a small kid with huge bones,
yeah,
you know, and a big chin. And you know, Michael McDonald, I love that kid. I've known him for a long time. And after the fight with Lineker, we were talking about it. I said, dude, I hit him with everything I got. All he did was blink and keep on coming at me. You know, so John also, not only does he have the power that he has, but he also does not back down from punches, which can be an asset or a problem depending on the fight, you know. Yeah. So I think that it's going to come down to how fast is John going to manage to maneuver out of is Dodson going to manage to maneuver out of Lineker's way, or is Lineker going to manage to land a shot here and there? Because if John does start landing shots, I don't believe that Dodson can take him.
Yeah. No, I agree. I don't think anybody can take Lineker's shots. You think Lineker's done it at flyweight?
Yeah. I mean, that was one of the things that I had foreseen. I knew that because, you know, everybody thought that, you know, Sean Shelby would say, well, you know, he's going to be smothered by the bigger wrestlers and everybody and blah, 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 blah. And I said, not really, because what's going to happen is that, you know, he's shorting everybody. He's going to – his body shots, it's more difficult for the bigger guys to defend his body
right.
shots.
And that's because they're a little higher up.
His game. Yeah, that's correct.
They're right under –
so he gets underneath and he lands them. You know, but not only that, Lineker's not only good at boxing. Lineker's got good jiu-jitsu, he's got good wrestling. He's good overall. He's got good kicks. He's a real MMA fighter. He's only 26. He's still evolving.
God,
and that's one of the most important things in the sport. If you're not, you need to evolve. Everybody's evolving. Every fight, you know, you can't look at a fighter only for his last fight. You can only look at how much he evolved. All these guys are evolving, and that's one of the good things about Lineker. He keeps on evolving.
What do people need to know about John Lineker? Because I tell you what, I think the first time I remember the first time I ever met John Lineker, it was in Macau, it was in the food court, and even though it was fight week, he was eating a damn piece of pizza.
Remember that shit.
That man loves pizza. I know that for a fact.
No, he changed. He matured. He gets it.
I was going to say, what do people need to know about him? Because to me, we were kind of laughing about this last week down in Brasilia, like Henan Barão. I like Henan Barão. I can't say a damn word to him. I don't speak, you know, it's just like, Henan, hey. I feel the same with John Lineker because Lineker is always very nice to me. It's very polite, respectful, and I love his fights, and he always seems very nice. And, of course, he's one of your clients, so he's very respectful. But I can't say a damn word to him because I don't speak Portuguese. He doesn't speak English. So what do people need to know about John Lineker? Because I think people know him as this great brawler and this great boxer, but just as a person, what should people know about John Lineker?
So John comes from one of the oldest towns in Brazil called Paranaguá in Curitiba. It's a port town. It's a seaside town. It's a very poor town. You know, he comes from a very poor background. His hobbies used to be raising fight cocks and going out into the swamps and catching crabs. Those were his hobbies. Okay, and it's a very small, little, beautiful town. It's awesome. You know, it's like it was the town was founded in the 1600s. You know, wow. He's a town hero. He was already a town hero way before the UFC. Now he's even more of that. You know,
wow.
He's a very simple kid. He used to work in as a bricklayer, which, you know, I mean, people, we need to understand that bricklaying in Brazil and bricklaying in the States are two different things. I mean, you're talking about a guy that's mixing cement and getting on a wheelbarrow and bringing him in and getting balled out by the other guy. It's crazy, you know. And I met John in his first fight in New Jersey against Godinot. He was there, and he couldn't speak a word of English.
Right.
And nobody could speak a word of Portuguese. And I don't even know how he got there, to tell you the truth. He was sent up like a FedEx package, you know. And I got there, and he's looking with that little forlorn look at his, you know. And I said, well, what's up, man? He said, no, I don't know, man. I can't understand anybody. And so I started helping him out, you know. And so I bought him a salad and a chicken breast, and that chicken breast lasted for 4 days. It must have fermented.
What?
And so he kept on saying, please take me to a store. I said, what the fuck? Okay. I ended up, people were going to the store. I took him to the store. So he goes in the store like a little mouse, because a little mouse. He goes in and comes up with a PlayStation. It's $500.
What?
I said, John, that your food money, that's all. And they say, Alex, I can't even eat. I always wanted a PlayStation. So, you know, he took his PlayStation home, and then we saw the fight with Godinot. That was a great fight. He didn't win the fight. He just had appendicitis operation a month before the fight.
Oh, Jesus.
He hid it from everybody, you know. So went out there and he got the bonus. They didn't want to give the bonus because he lost.
He
didn't make weight by a few ounces.
That's right.
The doctor, he wanted to make the weight and the doctor wouldn't let him.
That's right.
At that time, I managed to argue with Joe Silva to give him the bonus. I said, that's bullshit. You know, everybody saw how he got here, what he went through, and he was so stressed the doctor wouldn't let him finish making weight. So that's bullshit, and they ended up giving the bonus.
I had forgotten about that. Yeah, because you're not supposed to get it if you miss weight.
Yeah, but at that time, the argument worked. I tell you, if it was two few fights down the line, it wouldn't have worked anymore, you know.
That's awesome. So he spent his per diem on a PlayStation.
On a PlayStation.
That's fantastic.
Shit, you know? And then he won the bonus. It lasts about 3 months. He was only 21, I think, you know.
God, I forgot he's so young, man. That's
John,
awesome.
So many stories, and when I get to sit with you and talk about them, do I remember them, you know.
I know. We got to sit down and just do like an extended version and just roll it out. All right, let's talk about your boy Alex Cowboy Oliveira.
Oh, that's another one, man.
All right, listen, Will Brooks. Tough kid, man. Real tough kid. And this is a tough matchup stylistically. Talk about kind of what you're thinking about this one. You're excited for this fight.
So Will Brooks is American Top Team, right? He's my boy. He's American Top Team. He's my guy. I mean, I'm American Top Team. But sometimes the big team like that, people get put against each other. And Cowboy hadn't been up to the States for a while. They want to put another American Top Team fighter against Will Brooks. That wouldn't work because they train together. So
Cowboy has spent some time in Florida, though, right?
Yeah. He's part of the group, you know. Yeah. But at this point, he hadn't been there for a while. So it ended up that it worked out. We put him. Now, I've watched Will Brooks before I even knew he was going to fight Cowboy. He's an amazing athlete. He's extremely technical wrestler.
Right.
Okay. Extremely technical. How do I see this fight going? Okay, that's his asset. What is Cowboy's? Because now I'm talking about my team against my team, so I have to be completely neutral and look at it as a professional. What are Cowboy's assets? Extremely durable, extremely strong, very good striking, much bigger than Will.
Yep.
So you have two
gotta stay
ways
off
this can run.
Got to stay off his back, right?
Or Will going to take him down and dominate him for a boring fight?
Right.
Will's not a finisher.
No.
He's not going to knock him
grind
out.
You. He'll grind you.
He's going to grind him. You know, it's going to be a boring fight. Or he's not going to withstand Cowboy's strength and stamina, and Cowboy will get a TKO or a kill. That's the way I could see it going, you know. And like I say, I want Cowboy to win because, you know, he's my guy. But also, you know, it's a hard situation. It's one hand against the other. So I made the best man win.
Yeah.
That's the way I look at it, you know.
Because Cowboy, I mean, has he really been focused on defensive wrestling? I mean, is that
of course. They get it. They understand it. But that doesn't mean he didn't train in American Top Team. You don't have as good wrestling at American Top. You can't learn what Brooks does from day to night. It's too good. You know, he's really, really, really good.
Yeah.
That guy's a really, really good wrestler.
Where do you see, I mean, obviously you're his manager. He ultimately makes the call. But where do you see guiding Alex Oliveira's career? Because I wonder, it's funny because he has the nickname Cowboy, I think he kind of got grouped with Cowboy, Donald Cerrone, and then, of course, now he's doing the changing weight classes thing. And so I don't know. It's kind of funny. Like, I almost feel like, not necessarily by design, but almost by happenstance or whatever, that, like, they're kind of looked at the same, that where they're just, like, money fighters and they're going to put it on an exciting fight.
There's no problem with that because that's what we want to see. They're great matchups. You know, I mean, there have some guys any fighter can go for the title. I mean, and it can happen. But, you know, for these guys, it's not only about the title. It's about the challenge. It's about going there, making their money. It's about feeding their family, you know, and entertaining the public. And I think that both Cerrone, who I love, I like him a lot. He's a great guy. And Cowboy, it's my guy. And in Cowboy's case, I didn't touch on this. We talked about where Lineker comes from, but Cowboy comes from even closer.
I was going to ask you.
Closer. He comes from the interior of Rio de Janeiro, a place I know really well, a place called Three Rivers, Três Rios. He was a bull rider, but guys, we're not talking about PBR. We're talking about interior Brazil bull riding, where we don't know what the bull's going to do. We don't know what the cowboy's going to do. And whatever happens, there's no medics there, and there's no hospital either.
Jesus
so it's
Christ.
You know,
was he making money?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean,
it's just more like a machismo thing.
No, he'd make the money that could help him in that reality that he lived in, but it's a very, very poor, backward reality. You know?
Right.
A very, very funny fact on Cowboy. The Cowboy has four, I don't remember, it's three or four kids. Let's say it's three kids from three different mothers who live all on the same street. So, you know, I mean, guess what?
He's popular around town, or at least that little neighborhood.
You know, and it's John, you know how much I'm blessed with this stuff landing on my lap and being able to tell you stuff. But I only
managed to remember
and get this out to the world when I sit in front of you.
That's hilarious. He bought his mom a house, right?
He bought his mom a house. Now he just bought his own piece of land. And I couldn't contact him last week. He fell off the horse and broke his cell phone.
Yeah, he was riding a horse last week?
Yeah, riding. He says he can't survive without riding his horses. I mean, he's not doing anything risky or anything. Just not trying to, you know.
Dari, tell me about Caitlin Vieira, who's fighting the first fight of the night. She's making her UFC debut. I'll be honest with you. I have not even seen tape on her. I don't know anything about her.
She's an extremely tough fighter. She comes from Manaus. Okay, she's a Nova União fighter. Okay, from Manaus, which is a
jiu-jitsu.
That's one of the hotbeds of fighting, period, you know.
Yeah.
And I think people are going to really like what they see.
Yeah.
I'm not going to talk too much. Let her do her thing.
Let her come
she's
in
a judo fighter
a
like I am. She's a grounder, and she's extremely tough.
Awesome.
And I also think that Caitlin is a girl that will evolve. As she moves out of Manaus and start gaining the world, we're going to see a lot of good fights out of her.
Very cool. All right. Well, that's something to watch for. Exciting week this week. Last week was not such a great week for you.
You know, that's what I told you, you know, when you said, well, you got, you know what, guess what, this sport, we had Bigfoot who lost, was fighting really well, actually.
His chin was holding up.
You know, the problem with Bigfoot is that he's a big target.
Yeah.
And also that he's a little bit slow because of he should be permitted to do the TRT treatment.
He's one of the only guys that has a legitimate reason to do testosterone.
Testosterone is too low for him to survive correctly there as a fighter. Just too low. But so he's a little bit slower. He was doing great. He was kicking, keeping Roy Nelson away. And then Roy Nelson hit him. He got pissed off and started brawling. And, you know, he's a big target. You know, Bob Cook from AK, when Cormier and King Vilat, Bob Cook's a good friend of mine. I asked him, dude, what do you tell him? And Bob looked at me and said, I tell him to close their eyes and punch because they're going to hit it. You know, so, but let me tell you something. Bigfoot will still fight in the UFC or not.
Yeah, you talked to Stephen Morocco earlier today, and I think you told him, to put it bluntly, you do expect him to be released.
I do. I think it makes sense, you know, and I think that he has plenty of potential in Bellator and Ryzen and in Russia.
Yeah.
I know that they want to have a rematch against Fedor, so we'll see what happens. You know, I mean, but right now I'm still under contract. I'm not going to really, you know, get into that. Let the cards fall. May they.
It'd be interesting to see. I mean, the heavyweight divisions. I mean, it does make sense to release him, but I could see them hanging on to him just because they don't want to see him go to Bellator.
Yeah, but I don't think you see it making sense for anybody at this point.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think that. Yeah, well, let's see. I mean, I'm not sure. I can't really talk about that until we're out of contract.
How's he doing, though? You said you think, whether it's the UFC or anywhere else, you said you think he'll fight again. I mean, mentally, physically?
Dude, he is, out of all the fighters I've managed or all the fighters I know, he's the one that takes losses, absorbs losses the best. He does not get phased out by losses. He just sits down and said, fuck, goddammit, gets up and keeps on moving forward. You know, he's not, out of all the problems I do have with him, that's not one of them. He gets up in there to fight, and when he loses, he gets out of there, and he's okay.
That's awesome. Well, hopefully we get to see him fight again. Let's talk about Thiago Mejia Santos, a guy that had a lot of momentum behind him. A lot of people, I think he's a top talent. I don't know if he just had a bad night or if Eric Spicely had a great night. I will say this. I did see him limping by press row pretty noticeably when he left the cage.
Yeah.
So I definitely don't want to make an excuse for him, and I definitely don't want to take anything away from Eric Spicely. But it did seem like maybe something happened.
No, Eric fought a perfect fight. He fought really intelligently. But and you know, in the very first part of the fight where Eric tried to take him down, he sprawled. He pulled his hamstring.
Oh wow!
And you know, we got an MRI. It's a fact. You know, and then you can't. He should have stopped.
Should have just waved it off right there.
He just tried to keep on going. And if you watch the fight, you'll see that as he has the kid on his back and he tries to all of a sudden he just crumbles, and that
yeah.
because his leg couldn't take the weight anymore, because you can't close or extend your leg with it's torn. You can feel it, you know. So you can't. Your body's gonna focus on the tear. Part of the sport happens. I think he'll be back. You know, I'll keep on rebuilding him. He's got tons of potential. Just, you know, we cannot discard fighters because they lost one or two fights.
Right.
It's wrong. You know, it's like I told you about the grading system I'd like to put together.
Yep.
Where it rewards guys for taking risks. It's the same thing. Losses cost too much for these fighters. You know, every time that fighter goes up there, he's risking a lot. You know, he's risking time and money and everything. And you know, it's a big gamble, you know, because MMA, anything can happen in a fight. You know, your knee can go out, your leg can break, you can get knocked out, you know, and then nobody's rewarding these guys for the risks they take.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's one of the problems in MMA today. And I think that's one of the things that everybody wants to see exciting fights and everybody wants to see great fights, but we're not rewarding the guys that go out there and put that fight even though they lose.
Well, you and I were talking about this earlier. You know, Wanderlei Silva over there and Rizin, I'm not even sure how you're supposed to say it. Wanderlei Silva, you know, he gave a speech after the fight. He told some of the fighters he was disappointed in them, that they need to go for broke. And I think, you know, from what I read, the translations, he even said, like, this is not the UFC. It's not where you have to win. You need to come out here and you need to fight. Now, in the UFC, I think you still have to win, but you're right, man. There has to be some way that we can – I know you're a huge proponent of the Japanese way of seeing things, where it's just like, it's not just wins and losses. It's the effort, man. If you go out there and you throw down and you lose.
Well, okay, first of all, let me put it this way. In Japan, and I've been there thousands of times, and in Japan, it's not only about the guy who wins. It's about the guy who goes out there and fights his heart out. It's called Budo.
Yep.
Japan is a 3,000-year culture. You know, it's different. And the fans understand fighting a lot more than the American fans, you know. But it's a very interesting and valid point. I think that we need to, you know, what happens is people go out there and risk. They take risks. You know, when a guy goes out, and I don't care how good he is and how good the other guy is, when you're going out there and you're fighting and you're going for it, you're taking risks, you know. And when somebody pays for that risk he takes and he gets knocked out, it comes to at the end of the fight on Sherdog, it's a loss.
Right.
It's a loss by TKO or KO.
Right.
And let's say the guy take two risks in a row and lost two fights.
Now he's on a two-fight losing streak.
It's a two by TKO. And if it's three, so I came up, I had an idea. I said, why don't we grade fights? Why don't we create a simple 1, 2, 3, 4 grade system where a one fight, it's a boring fight. Two fights, a fight. Three fights, a great fight. Good fight. And a four fight's an awesome fight. So you look at the guy Sherdog and you say, oh, it came from three losses, but those are three great four losses. While the other guy came from four wins, but those are three grade one wins. So guess what? Now we have a piece of information that tells me what kind of fight we're looking at.
I like that.
Because a guy can have 30 fights and they can be all grade one fights. Who wants to see this guy fight?
I don't.
Do you?
No.
And he's getting away with it. Maybe if he sees a reward for the risk he's taking, maybe he'd do grade two and grade three fights.
Yeah.
So I think that measuring the fights in this way could change the whole landscape.
It's interesting.
Because we're realizing that the value of the fight is the risk that's taken.
Do you think that could factor even into like a way a guy's contract was negotiated or anything like that?
No, I don't think so. I think that can be part of the industry. I think that I don't think that the contracts necessarily have to deal with the way the fights are measured. But I've talked to Grant Jackson and John Crouch and Winkle John and Herb Dean and John McCarthy and Conan and everybody
names.
And everybody agrees that this is something that could work.
That would be cool.
And I will try to push this, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that it's something that will make the sport better. Even if it doesn't happen exactly the way I'm saying, something along those lines needs to happen to reward these guys that go out there, and there's thousands of them out there. Listen, people don't understand. The UFC only hires guys that have perfect records.
Right.
But there's great fighters out there that we never get to see because their records aren't perfect, because exactly they come out and let it all hang out. And what we want to see is let them see the guys let it all hang out, and we don't get to see that.
I mean, a 10-0 guy that's boring, or a 5-5 guy that's going to come and throw down. Give me the 5-5 guy. You
Absolutely.
Know what I mean?
That's what we want to see, and the Japanese understand that. You know, so let's see if this will work. Let's see. It's a push in the right direction.
I like it. I like it. I'm going to let you go pretty soon, so we can just turn this thing off and have some frosty beverages. But while you're here, everybody's asking me what they, you know, the UFC sale, what do they see different? I haven't seen much different yet. I feel like it's still too fresh, too new. I haven't seen much. You're behind the scenes a little bit more than I am. Have you seen anything? Is there anything you can put your finger on that says this has definitely changed?
No, I think everything that I can see, everybody sees. It's on the media. It's at the top. You know, I think that, you know, sports going through a transformation, you know, and I think that it's a part of the evolution of the sport. If it's good, if it's bad, whatever it is, it's going to keep on going. It's going to keep on happening. Time is going to keep on going. Fights are going to keep on happening. Hopefully, you know, I always tell people this. There was a boxing match in the 1920s that had 80,000 people at it. There was no Twitter. There was no Facebook. There was no cell phones. There weren't even phones. You know, and they managed to promote a fight that had 80,000 people. It was Jack Dempsey against the French guy. Anybody could look it up. It was the first time that a sports event was broadcasted live on radio on Times Square. They had 4,000 people on Times Square. So the point is that if boxing could do that in the 1920s, which is 100 years ago.
Yeah.
We're only been doing this as a structure for 20, so who knows where we could go with it, you know?
It's true. I'm excited. It's a nervous time, I think, for us all, but if somebody came in and spent $4 billion, they want to do something good with it.
It's going to keep on going. It's not going to stop. We all love fighting.
That's it, man. All right. Well, I know we're just going to keep talking about fighting, but we can't do it on air for everybody. We got to still have a couple little secrets here and there.
Cool.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. Hope you guys enjoyed that. That was my good friend, Alex Davis. I mean, we're not supposed to really have friends in this sport. You know what I'm saying? We're covering it. We got to remain professional. And, you know, for the most part, we do that, man. I don't like to hang out with the people that we're covering and that sort of thing. It can make it a little unprofessional at times when you have those types of relationships. But, man, when you're on the road and you meet people, there's just certain people that kind of have an effect on you and stick with you. And I think Alex is truly, truly one of the good people in the sport. So hopefully you guys enjoyed that conversation. Kept him a little longer than I meant to. But, man, he just gets talking. I like hearing what he has to say. So, all right, let me update the scene for you. It is Thursday night now. This is our normal recording time. We're kind of back in the swing of things. Let me first start out by saying I want to apologize to everybody that was hoping that they would get a little and a half from Priscilla. We couldn't make that happen. We had some tech issues, man. Myself and Cole Coffee, we had our own personal tech issues, which was frustrating, I must say. And then that was compounded by the fact that we experienced some tech issues from the UFC side as well. I will say it wasn't necessarily their fault, but the post-fight press conference, kind of funny the way it works in Brazil, of course, you know, everything's in Portuguese. There's not a lot of English-speaking media down there. In fact, I think if I remember right, myself and Cole Coffee were the only traveling media from the States. Yeah, I think so. So, you know, everything's set up in Portuguese, and they do have a translation. I'm sure if you've ever watched one of those press conferences, you'll see or you'll hear, I should say, rather, the translation that's going on during the stream. That is, of course, the lovely voice of Derek Lee. If you've ever seen him in the Octagon, you probably know who he is. Of course, he was involved with Black House for a long time. That management group is kind of changing a little bit. I think his role is changing, but he's certainly doing a lot of work there for the UFC, providing translation services for them. He also comes to the States every now and then and does some stuff from there, but definitely does it when he's in Brazil. So he's the one providing the translation. Now, normally what the UFC does is they give you headphones, and there's these little, phone-sized receiver or so with a headset you put on. You walk up, they give you one, they tell you to put the channel on Portuguese and English, which that's amazing. Derek does a translation for both. So when people are speaking in English, he's translating to Portuguese. When people are speaking Portuguese, he's translating to English, and you don't necessarily hear both of them, but because he has to switch back and forth between channels. But pretty damn cool for a guy that's not even trained professionally to be a translator to be able to pull that off. So he does that. But now, I'm no huge tech guy, as you may or may not know, but the way that they transmit this stuff in the press room, which was actually in Brasilia, it was actually outside. It was a big tent, not a cheap tent, a nice, well-put-together tent or whatever, but definitely a temporary-type building on the outside of the structure of Nilson Nelson Gymnasium. So we go in there, and there's these, infrared broadcasting points, I guess. But for whatever reason, where I was sitting was literally the dead spot for the entire press room. So these infrared waves, I guess the place that they're being transmitted is on the outside, and where I was sitting, kind of right in the center of the room, I couldn't get anything. So I couldn't hear a damn word. So the entire press conference is going on, and if you look back, I started out by asking Roy Nelson a couple questions in English, and then the staff there. Now, this is not the PR team. This is the people that were working for the venue that were assisting out. They basically tapped me on the shoulder and grabbed the microphone out of my hand, and they were like, "You need to stop asking questions, young man." And I was like, come on, dog. I flew all the way down here. Let me get a couple extra questions in. And it was funny because the PR team saw it and they tried to help. They knew I had a few extra questions. But ultimately, I just told them, don't worry, don't bother, don't hand me the microphone because I can't hear a damn word anyway. The translation wasn't working. And the tech guys are running out. I mean, kudos to the UFC. They were doing everything they could to try to help me out. They got respect for the MMA Roadshow. They got respect for MMA Junkie. They're trying to help out. And it just turns out I was in this dead spot where I couldn't get any translation. And, I had all my gear laid out and plugged in, computer, cameras stretched out. So it didn't really make sense to move. Fortunately, Fernanda Praches was right there. She was recording everything. So she was able to relay anything that was happening to me in real time. She's a fantastic translator as well, as I'm sure you guys are definitely aware of by now. So she was kind of communicating that. And then, of course, Cole Coffey was on the camera. He was recording everything as well. So we didn't miss anything, but it made it impossible for me because I literally had no idea what was going on in the press conference. I had to go back and review it afterwards, which definitely slowed us down. So, there was that issue. We had some that slowed us down. Then there were some tech issues on our end as well. And next thing you knew, it was just we had to go. We had to get a quick bite to eat, and we had to head to the airport and get home. And we just didn't get time to do the and a half. And I hated it because we were in Brazil, and I had my man Cole Coffey with me. And I just want to apologize to everybody. So that's kind of what happened there. Now, listen, there wasn't these. One of the things I did want to talk about that I did hear while I was there was some stuff on this Ally Aquinta situation. Now, of course, you guys familiar with the Ally Aquinta situation. Very, very unhappy with the UFC right now. A little bit frustrated with their handling. He ended up not being on the UFC 205 card in New York, which I think everybody thought he was going to be on. Certainly made sense. Of course, he was supposed to fight Thiago Alves and ultimately decided he's not going to. And what it boiled down to was he's unhappy with his work situation and unhappy with the way the UFC treated him. He's done a couple interviews where he talked about how the UFC treated him. I did say, I did hear a couple of little rumblings. Now, the problem is, of course, nobody will speak on record about this, so there's nothing we can really do to report it. But I will say, I did hear there were maybe a few discrepancies in his story. One had to do with the surgery. Apparently, the $60,000 surgery was a bit of an experimental surgery, from what I was told. And the UFC had doctors that basically recommended something different. And that's where a lot of the difference came in. Certainly not privy to the medical records there, not privy to exactly what the conversation was. But apparently that was some of the discrepancy. And then, you know, when it came down to him not going to the summit, what I was also told is that not only did he not go to the summit, but he basically just didn't get on a plane. And people were expecting him. He didn't tell anybody. He didn't give anybody a heads up. There were people at the airport waiting to take him away, and he just never showed up. And so that was probably what angered the UFC so much. So unfortunately, nobody will go on record and mention that stuff. But these are some things I heard from, you know, some people in the know over the last week or so, and I did want to share that. Now, you know, I think it probably makes sense. You know, the truth is somewhere in the middle. Anytime you have people on two sides of the story, the truth probably lies somewhere in the middle, right? So it is interesting, man. I was able to verify that Al Iaquinta is the first person that has ever received this penalty, and to date only person, this penalty of not being allowed to receive fight night bonuses. I think a lot of people were curious. I know I was curious. You know, is this something that they've done to other people as well? From what I'm told, no, he's the first one they've done it to. It's interesting. I mean, damn, $50,000 is a lot when you go in there and throw down. I mean, not a lot of people make $50,000 in their fight. So, I mean, that's, I don't want to say life-changing money, but it is pretty much life-changing money. So to be excluded from that is a pretty stiff penalty. But, you know, the UFC doesn't have a lot of penalties they can enforce. I mean, when you're playing for a team or whatever, they can fine you. The league can fine you. You can't really do that here. So I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. It is interesting, too. You know, does that preclude him from getting fight of the night? And if so, doesn't that penalize your opponent, too? Because, I mean, if you really do have the fight of the night and you're not allowed to get bonuses, and my gut tells me the UFC would probably just cut that dude, your opponent, a check for 50 G's and be like, listen, we were going to give you fight of the night. We couldn't because, you know, of a situation, but you definitely put your work in. So that's my gut. But I don't know, man. I don't know. That's an interesting question, man. I kind of side with I side with both of them. You can't side with both of them, can you? You can, I guess I can understand both sides. It's a stiff penalty for the UFC to throw in, but, you know, they don't have a lot of leverage once it comes to, you know, once contracts are signed. What do you do if people are just like, F you, I'm not going to do it? So kind of reminds me of, remember all the talk in South Korea about Benson Henderson saying that he wasn't going to wear the Reebok gear? And, you know, if you'll remember the weigh-ins, he kind of came in with his gear inside out. He had, like, baggy stuff on. It was really bizarre. And remember we heard those rumblings of the UFC maybe saying they'd pull the fight, the main event, if he wasn't willing to wear it. It's, you know, they don't have a lot of leverage sometimes. They've got all the power in the world, but when it comes down to people trying to take a stand, well, what can they enact, you know? So I found it interesting. I found that whole story interesting. Hopefully they can get things worked out because Al Iaquinta is a lot of fun to watch fight, man. That dude comes and brings it. And I hate to see him kind of waste away his better years sitting on the shelf. So hopefully cooler heads can prevail. Now, you may wonder, John, what the hell are you doing talking by yourself? Certainly you have somebody with you. Well, the magnificent one, Stephen Morocco, was supposed to be with me at this time. He is not. Can you believe that? He worked his ass off 12 hours, like we do. That's what you do when you're on the road. You work 12 hours. Of course, this is his hometown. And ultimately, he's a newlywed. The dude's been married for a couple months, and he decided, bro, I'd love to sit down and do some podcasts with you, but I got to go home and see my wife. So sweet. Newlyweds. That'll change. No, I'm just kidding. So I told him, of course, bro, get the hell out of here. Go home and take care of your wife. Don't worry about this stupid, silly podcast. So that is why the Magnificent One isn't here. I am here by myself. I will say I now have a refrigerator full of craft beers, mostly IPAs, of course, because we're in Portland, and this is a place of breweries and a place of, you know, some beer snobs. Let's be honest. We walked into a market, myself and the Magnificent One, Stephen Morocco, and listen, I'm just going to say, I saw out of the corner of my eye, There were some PBRs there. There were. Now, they were the 12-ounce variety, which kind of turned me off anyway, because come on, dude, like a 12-ounce beer can, like,
come on, dude. Like, I mean, that's like, might as well be a shot glass. You know what I'm saying? Like, I got how many of these cans I got to go through, right? So I didn't want to do that. And the other thing was, truthfully, I just didn't want to. I didn't want to embarrass Steven. You know what I mean? Like, he's bringing his coworker in to pick up some frosty beverages to get some work done. And I mean, the craft beer selection in this market was like it's basically the opposite of where I shop. You know, where I shop, it's like, you know, this long beer cooler, and there's your Budweiser, your Bud Light, your Coors Light, your Miller Light, you know, all your just traditional, you know, shit beers, I guess, PBR, all that stuff. And then you got the little tiny craft beer selection, you know, and if you're that beer snob, you go to that little tiny craft beer selection. But in Portland, oh, no, no, sir. No, no, no. It is the exact opposite of that, my friend. No, no, no. They've got your generic brand beverages all kind of crammed together into one little space. And that one little space caught my eye. But I decided to defer to my man Steven Morocco's recommendations on the frosty beverages and also not to embarrass him by making him carry everything out. So I did. So now I'm drinking, what is this? A Laurelwood Brewing Company. That's a Portland beverage right here. Free Range Red, Northwest Red Ale. I gotta admit, it's pretty good. I'm not gonna lie. Morocco did pretty good, man. He did all right. Now, here's something else he did good today. Even though he's not here, I still want to play this. It's his interview, not mine. It's his interview with Tam Den McCrory. Now, I did record it. I did, you know, I was working the camera on it, so I was involved. But I just figured the personalities of Tam Den McCrory and the personality of Steven Morocco, those two could probably get together and create a little magic. And you know what? They did. Tandon opened up. He had some great stuff. He talked about his fight. And then we didn't put this on Junkie, so this is an exclusive. It'll probably come out at some point. But we started doing this thing where we've asked guys about their first fight just to kind of relive what their first fight was like and tell us what the details were. But in that, he ended up telling us where the nickname the Barn Cat came from, which I had never heard the story before. So I figured, listen, even though we're not going to release that on Junkie for a while, if you listen to the Roadshow, you deserve a little something special. You know, you're the extra hardcore. You're the coolest of the cool, I got to say. And I had some people today that came up and were giving me love for the Roadshow. Man, nothing feels better. And people asking for my man Cole Coffee, who unfortunately is not here. But Cole Coffee will be working to put this thing together. And he's actually chilling in Dana Point, California with his girl, Agent H, having a little weekend, doing their thing. So, listen, I'm going to kind of grab another frosty craft brew or two. And while I do that, listen to Tam Den McCrory, because dude just remains one of the most interesting interviews in all of MMA.
So they call you up, they say you're going to fight Nate Marquardt, former Strikeforce champ, UFC title contender. What's your reaction?
Well, at first, you know, I was coming off of my last fight, and, you know, I was training, but not really, like, ready to fight. Still was on medical suspension or whatever it was, so, you know, at first, I was kind of like, you know, what's the risk, reward, should I take this fight, should I not? And then, at a certain point, you're like, opportunities like this don't really come about, you know, every day. So when I ended up, you know, thought about it for a day and started calling up all my trainers, people, my manager, I was like, how quick can I get things going out in Vegas? And we just figured it out and jumped on it and took it, you know.
So now that you're back in it, do you think it was the right amount of time to take off after the loss?
I mean, everything about this camp is like breaking my pattern, but it's, I think, you know, getting out of your comfort zone is the only way that you really find growth. You know, originally my goal was to take a little time off. You know, I have a newborn son, I've been grinding for that whole fight, and I was like, I'll take the rest of the summer off and try to fight somewhere in December, you know, like, you know, like, take a step back for a minute. But, you know, when opportunity knocks, you know, either sink or swim. So I just looked at it as an opportunity for, you know, growth. And, you know, I'm never too far out of shape. You know, I'm never out of shape, but I'm not always in shape, you know? I'm never too far out. So it was, you know, 8 weeks, 9 weeks. I think I had 8 weeks it was when they called me or somewhere about that. So I was like, good to go. And started training right then and there and, you know, picked it up, I guess you could say.
So Vegas is where you plan to do all your camps from here on out?
It looks like it. I mean, I really had a good experience there working at Extreme Couture and working with Dewey Cooper, all those guys, Mike Atkinson over at Athletic Gains. They, you know, gave me a trifecta there. Dennis Davis is cornering me as well, and, you know, he's obviously got a wealth of experience. So I really had a good vibe with those guys and took all the things that I've already built over a decade and then just refined them and put them to new tasks, you know, and so far it's working out. I feel real good about it, and plus the lifestyle, you know, it's the first time when I'm home, I wear many hats. Like, I run a gym, I got wife and kids, I have to travel a lot to train because I don't have anything in my area, but I'm like an hour and a half or 2 hour, 3 hour drive. I can go there or go there to get the training that I need. But this is the first time that I just lived one place, and my job was fighting, training, eating, and sleeping, and it was a breath of fresh air, you know, to be able to just focus on one task and not have a million things pulling me in a thousand directions. So,
is there any one area you look at Nate Marquardt, obviously an extremely experienced competitor? Is there any one area you look at him and say, I'm better than him here?
You know, well, I wouldn't be fighting him if I didn't think I was better than him, you know? Like, that's kind of like a weird question, right? I know his experience and I know his skill set. I know that he's a tough competitor. And you could say all the exact same things about me, which kind of makes it interesting. And, you know, is there like some glaring weakness in his game, you know, that I see? No, you know? But it's not always about like that one thing. It's about how you blend your moves together, how you put, you know, get your flow going. So I think that he's a tough competitor. I see that, you know, he has some strengths. Obviously, we talk about power. It's the last thing to go on an aging fighter. But at the same time, you know, if you're standing there or you're running in and trying to, you know, force a knockout or whatever, that's how you get clipped, you know? So kind of just the idea is to stay patient in this fight, look for opportunities, create some opportunities, and capitalize on them. That's kind of the name of the game for this fight. My last fight, I went in there with too much pressure on myself to perform and came out flat, and obviously I was the one performed on. So this fight, you know, I got back to my roots, got back to my normal mental state, I guess you could say, and just go out there and have fun and perform.
So it's interesting the stakes, because you're coming off a knockout. He's 2-5 in his last 7 fights. How do you think that affects the way he competes in the octagon?
I don't know. I mean, there could be some desperation there for him. You know, he's like I said, he's what, 37, whatever. His days are limited, you know. I'm not saying that out of disrespect, but I don't plan on fighting when I'm 37, to be honest, you know. I'm gonna if the money's great, maybe I will be, but I'm 29 years old. I got a good 5-6 years left in the sport. I'm gonna take it as far as I can, but I'm not gonna be 40 years old and still fighting, you know. Like, it's just, I'm gonna hang up. I got other things I could do to make a living, but I'm loving what I'm doing right now, and I'm gonna keep riding it and going. So,
fans love you. Like, they follow your career.
Really,
like,
they do.
Yeah, people do. Underground, like, people really seem to root for you and just to see you succeed. Do you get a sense of that? And if so, do you bring that into your? Does that help motivate you when the days are tough?
I mean, I'm very, like, it's funny because one of my guys, Jed Michael, MMAMedicine.com is his thing. He's my acupuncturist. I bring him out. He's Masters of Oriental Medicine, all that hippie stuff. I bring him out to all my fights, and I was doing my workouts this week, and he's like, man, you are one, like, self-motivated mother, you know, whatever. And I was like, thanks, man. Like, I don't know how to, you know. He's like, you just... Nobody barks at me. Nobody has to tell me what to do. I know what I should be doing. I know what to do. I need the guidance of some coaches, but, you know, I'm driven, you know. I want to be successful, and a lot of people, you know, if they support me and they love me, like, I appreciate that, you know, but I'm going to be driven whether they want to see me fail or want to see me succeed, you know. And that's kind of the way people guys make their name in the sport. Either everybody wants to see you lose or everybody wants to see you win, but if they're tuning in, you make the money, you know. And I'm glad to be not the heel of the sport, I guess you could say. I don't want to be the heel, so I appreciate that. The one thing that bothers me, though, is they always say, he has such a cult following, you know? And I'm like, I love that I have a cult following because I'm not, like, not a mainstream type of guy, right? Like, I'm pretty different, I guess you could say. And so I can appreciate having that cult following, but at the same time, I'm like, man, when am I going to get to the mainstream following? The mainstream following gets the money, you know? That's where I'm trying to get to, you know? That's where the notoriety comes. And, you know, I really appreciate the UFC giving me opportunity, giving me the, whatever, the Fight Pass featured bout or main event or whatever, because, you know, I could just be any regular guy on the undercard and nobody would get any, you know? But, you know, getting that publicity, you know, really shows that they're pulling for me, and I appreciate that.
We're doing a series of fighters just telling us about their first fight. Mm-hmm. What was it like for you? What was the experience like? What do you remember from it? Just take us through the entire experience.
Oh, man. So my first fight, I was fighting for, I believe it was World Fighting League at Club Lido in Revere, Massachusetts. And I was fighting this guy, John Jenner, and he was like 5'2", 180, or 5'4", 180, like just ridiculously shorter than me. Like, just, I was a beanpole at like 180 or whatever it was at the time, and he was just short, stocky, whatever. And, you know, it was like the most, like, now I look back at it, like, back then you were like, oh man, I'm fighting, whatever, but now I look back, oh man, that was the, like, one of the sketchiest, like, experiences ever. Like, there's no way any of that would fly, because back then there was no commissions. I mean, everybody says, how many amateur fights did you, you know, because I always tell my guys or people that are striving to go pro, I was like, get some amateur fights, get the experience, you know what I'm saying? They're like, well, how many amateur fights did you have? I was like, I had zero, you know? But it was a different time back when I was fighting, and plus, you know, I had all those years of wrestling experience and competition, so anyways. But we ended up fighting, and it was like 2 minutes, and basically I just went out there and, like, threw a few punches, slammed him on the ground, you know, just started punching him in the head, you know. I mean, I knew some submissions at the time, but really I was just like, if I keep punching him, they'll eventually stop it, right? So I basically just bludgeoned this guy from, like, I was in the mount, and I think he rolled over, and, you know, whatever. And it was like 2 minutes of just the most ridiculous fighting you ever seen in your life. Just me bludgeoning this guy. And that's how the nickname the Barn Cat came from, right? So this one guy, you know, used to train at Bomb Squad or whatever, and it was like in the middle of McGraw, which is like nowhere, and there's abandoned barns, like, falling over and stuff, and there were these barn cats. And Marty the One Man Party was telling us that, I don't know if you guys know this, but barn cats, pound for pound, most ferocious animal alive. It's like, if you had a 1,000-pound barn cat versus like a 1,000-pound bear, it'd kill the bear easy, you know? And then that, like, kind of like steamrolled, and it was like, you know, a barn cat could do this, and if you had a 1,000-pound barn cat versus a 1,000-pound shark, you know, barn cat kill a shark in the water. I mean, it's just that ferocious, because pound for pound, it's the most ferocious animal alive. And we always saw these barn cats running around. I actually took, one of them had babies, and I actually have the cat still. He's a little prick too, you know. Not thankful for anything. I took him out of the barn, whatever. So, and then in my second fight, they're like, you know, you were pretty ferocious in that first fight, and I think your nickname's the Barn Cat. And I thought, like, it was a horrible nickname. I didn't like it, but then, they snuck it in there on me, you know. They announced me as Tamden the Barn Cat McCrory, and I was, like, walking out to the crowd in my second fight, and they were like, yeah, Barn Cat! Like, a bunch of drunk broads in the back were screaming for me, and I was like, okay, you know, like, I'll let this one go for a little bit. And, you know, it just kind of goes, like, I'm a relatively unassuming personality or guy or fighter or whatever. I don't know. People don't look at me and think I'm that tough. Stefan Bonner was like, Tanner's kind of like me. We both look like pussies, but we can actually fight. And I was like, yeah, I guess so, man. I'll take that one.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was Tam Dan, the Barn Cat McCrory. Great story about where his name came. And I can't be the only one that wants to meet Marty the One Man Party, right? I mean, come on, dude. That's a name right there. Listen, sorry Steven couldn't be here. You know, he's kind of our lead reporter. I mean, I'm technically lead staff reporter. That's my title according to the MMA Junkie hierarchy. It's just always been my title. We don't really worry about titles so much. But I'm not going to lie, man. Steven is the one doing a lot of the legwork for what we do, man. He's the one hammering the athletic commissions, you know, researching some of the stories that aren't necessarily the most fun all the time. And, you know, he's crossed some paths with some people over the years that he's kind of frustrated, but it's only because he's trying to put in some work. One of those stories he's tracking right now is I know Steven's heard that there's going to be a lot of layoffs coming at the UFC, and I say a lot. That there's going to be layoffs coming. You know, it's difficult to quantify. I can say that, you know, the people I've talked to within the UFC, off record, of course, I think everybody assumes there's going to be some. I mean, you know, we've talked about it. Cole Coffey and I have kind of guessed what we think might or might not happen. You know, I think some of the regional offices, we might see them go away. Some offices consolidated. I mean, if WME IMG has an office in a city, why would you continue to have two offices in the city? You're just paying real estate costs. That's silly. You know, WMEIMG has an office in New York. Does it make sense for the UFC to maintain an office in Toronto? Could they just consolidate the Toronto office into the New York office? I mean, things like that are going to have to be addressed. I still contend that, you know, marketing and advertising people are probably the ones that are most nervous right now. I mean, WMEIMG is loaded up with people on that front. So, you know, hopefully it's not the people that are on the ground with us, the operations people that we see on a week-to-week basis. I got to think those people are going to be safe, right? I mean, they're the ones that know how to run a fight company. But, you know, I think there will be some changes. So I do think, you know, Steven's hearing it. I've heard similar, but, you know, not, you know, nothing definite. But, man, I do think we're going to see some people, unfortunately, you know, lose their job. I guess there's no easy way to say it. I mean, I think everybody's probably expecting it, and we'll just see how far it goes. Hopefully it happens sooner than rather than later, so people can just kind of move on with their lives and get ready. And you know, hopefully the people that hate, man, I'm not gonna lie, I just hate talking about that stuff, man. Hopefully the people that do lose their job are well taken care of and are able to quickly land on their feet somewhere else. Speaking of WMEIMG, it was announced tonight, as we recording this on Thursday night, like we do on the MMA Roadshow, that there are 23 new celebrity investors in the UFC. Now, it was actually announced on Conan O'Brien, and then come to find out that it was also a story on WallStreetJournal.com. Now, I'm sure you guys are all out there reading WallStreetJournal.com, but I am not, my friends. I am not. But luckily, I Googled and I did find that. But Tom Brady, Cam Newton, Maria Sharapova, Serena and Venus Williams, Ben Affleck, Mark Wahlberg, Adam Levine, LL Cool J, Conan O'Brien, all now partial investors. By the time this comes out in the morning, Friday morning, as we do, you will have a list of all 23 investors that has not been made public yet. I have heard some of the names that I could not confirm, but are likely involved in as well, are The Weeknd, Flea and Anthony Kiedis from the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Guy Fieri, Jimmy Kimmel, Trey Parker, Tyler Perry, Rob Dyrdek, and Calvin Harris. Also, people are on that list. Now, I find this news incredibly interesting. I really do. And you know, I don't know if you guys will feel the same, and I could see this being one of those stories that kind of gets passed over, like, yeah, whatever. I mean, who cares? I mean, because let's be honest, I don't know how much money they put in. It wasn't divulged. It'll never be divulged. Maybe they didn't put much at all. Or maybe they basically paid a little bit of money to ensure that they always have tickets to any show they want to go to. Celebrities want to have that honor, right? Maybe that's part of the incentive. I mean, it's not like
you know, Tom Brady's going to be calling up the matchmakers and saying, yo, put this fight together, man. It's something I want to see. You know what I mean? They're not going to have any say at all in the company. But what I think is insane is the social media presence. I mean, think about that list of celebrities we just read. Sports stars, actors, musicians, and think about the celebrity reach that they have on their social media, on sports platform, or you know, in the sporting world, in the entertainment world, you know, in the just everywhere, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I mean, go through and add that up. How many people are they reaching? And now you just start driving home that message that the UFC is cool, the UFC is acceptable. I mean, they have. And they got to have some kind of vested interest. I'm sure they have some financial, you know, there's maybe some gain or some upside. But to me, I mean, I think it's probably just kind of a vanity thing for these people, right? To say they're involved. I mean, a lot of those names that were read off, we've seen at UFC events before. They're obviously fans. Ari Emanuel actually told the Wall Street Journal it was easy for him to pick out which 23 should be involved because those are people that had asked him for tickets before. So there you go. But to me, you guys that are listening to this MMA Roadshow, you're hardcores. You get it, man. You're already sold. You don't need anybody to sell you. You know this is the best sport on the face of the earth. But the casuals are the ones that turn events into mega events. You know, they're the ones that drive the sport to reach higher platforms, to continue to grow and to get into further places. And the more recognition that it gets from the common fan, the bigger this thing is going to get. And I think this is a sweet little move by WMEING. I don't know. Maybe I'm just interested to see what this is voiced, because I can see some people saying, ah, whatever, it's no big deal. And maybe it isn't. But to me, I think this is like a shrewd little move that's going to just continue to hammer home that, yes, the UFC and mixed martial arts, man, it's cool. It's your favorite celebrity likes this sport. Now you want to watch it. You know, now you at least want to know about it. Now you're at least curious about it, or at least you're hearing about it. Now it's becoming an accepted part of your everyday life, whereas before, you know, this was the stuff that was banned on pay-per-view or whatever. You know, and now it's a little bit more acceptable. So I love this move, man. I think it's incredibly cool, and I'm interested to see kind of what kind of cross-marketing, I guess, they use. I mean, how involved these people get, do these athletes and celebrities get? I'm interested to see. So, thought this was big news. Of course, came out late tonight, right before I sat down to record this, and it'll be more in the morning, from what I understand. I think there's going to be a press release coming out. So, by the time you listen to this, you'll probably already know the full 23. So, I will not have broken any news to you whatsoever. But just know the intention was there. You see what I'm saying? I tried to. I just couldn't get this damn thing out to you soon enough. All right, listen, I wanted to bring you a conversation I had from earlier today with Andre Feely, Team Alpha Male, UFC featherweight, Andre Feely. I like this kid, man. I really do. He's had some ups and downs. I hate to say that he hasn't lived up to his potential, but, I mean, you know, he did have a lot of hype behind him, a lot of people that like him. A fantastic nickname that was given to him by Megan O'Leary. Of course, the touchy feeling. That was a fantastic nickname there. Glad that he embraced that, by the way. It's too funny not to embrace it. But I like this kid. I really do. And I think this is a tough situation, man. You know, he comes off that loss to Yair Rodriguez in that battle of prospects. Yair actually happens to be here as a guest fighter, by the way. So we'll have interviews with him over the weekend. But loses to Yair Rodriguez. No shame in that. That guy looks like the real deal. But then decides to step in against a ranked opponent in Hakan Diaz on short notice, about 3 weeks' notice. Now, he says, you know, that's not too bad. He's been in shape, but steps in on short notice against a ranked opponent. And Hakan Diaz, you know, not always the most exciting fighter in the world, but dude can be a handful. He really can, man. He can be problematic. And Andre Feely says, hell with it. I'm going to go with it. So we requested some time with him. He was not part of the official media activities. Just like Tandon McCrory wasn't. So we requested a chance to sit down and talk to him, and the USC PR department was fantastic, as always. They said, we will get you that time. So we did that this morning before we went to the official open workouts, and I wanted to share that with you guys. Andre Touchy Feely.
We'll be right back. Haven't seen you since April.
Yeah,
let's go back a little bit, man. I mean, I know that was a fight you were looking forward to, and things didn't go your way. Right. Talk about just the emotion that you took out of that, just kind of lessons you took out of that fight.
The biggest thing I took from the Yair Rodriguez fight is that, I mean, obviously he's good, but I feel like the fight was pretty close, and every time I threw my hands, I was having success. I think the biggest thing I took from that was not to overanalyze. Going into the Yair fight, he throws a lot of crazy stuff, and so it was like all this time of just like prepare for this, get ready for this, watch for this thing and counter this, and instead of just fighting, instead of going in there and beating someone up, you know, it's easy to make this thing more complicated than it really is. You know, when I got into the sport, I was 14 or 15 and I started fighting because I liked to fight, you know, and I had success early on because I just wanted to beat people up. It was easy, you know, and then when the stakes get higher, you start adding all these things yeah, you have physical therapy and you have this and you got to make sure you diet this way. And it's easy to get lost in the sport of things instead of just realizing that, like, no matter what else happens, like, your job is to beat someone else up. So I really got back to just trusting my training and going off my instinct and just enjoying just the fight and not overanalyzing things.
That's awesome. It makes a lot of sense. I think you can see sometimes when people just are overanalyzing their head, not pulling the trigger. So how do you focus on that in training every day? How do you improve that?
You just have fun. My sparring rounds have been fun, you know? I took the fight on 3 weeks' notice, but since April, even before I was cleared to spar, I was drilling jiu-jitsu and stuff. I was right back in the gym after the Yair fight. I've been in the gym since the Yair fight. So taking this fight on 3 weeks' notice doesn't bother me because I've been putting in the rounds and I've been having fun. Like, there's no pressure. It's like I knew after the loss, especially with how many 45ers there are, the UFC is not exactly like concerned about getting me right back into a fight. I knew it was going to be some time. And so I just enjoyed. I had like 6 months of training where I ate whatever I wanted and I got to enjoy my life, but I had fun. Like, it was fun to go spar. You know, I go in on Wednesday mornings and have fun. I don't have an opponent to get ready for. I just go in, I help my friends for their fights and get punched a little bit and have fun. And that's how it's supposed to be, you know?
No doubt. You mentioned taking this fight on short notice. I mean, a tough opponent to step in on short notice, right? So talk to me about how that happened. I mean, did you get the call? Did you bid for it? I mean, how did this come together and why was this a good fight for you?
It came down, it was weird how it happened. I saw a fan tweet me. Like, they tagged me. Somebody said, Brian Ortega out, Hakran Diaz needs a fight. And a random fan tagged me and said, oh, this would be good for Touchy Feely. And I saw it online, and I didn't retweet or didn't do anything. I just texted Sean Shelby right away. I was like, dude, I want the Hakran fight. Like, fight will be a banger. Like, throw me in. I'm ready. I've been training my weight. I just told him, put me in. Like, I'm good. And he said, all right, tell your management to call me. So I called my management, and they got on it. And that's how it got inked that day. I don't know. I'm not in this sport to, like, I don't know how to say this appropriate. I'm not in this sport to, I'm not in this sport to take easy fights. I'm not in this sport to be a pussy about it. Like, I'm here to fight the best guys in the world. Like, why else would you be in the UFC if you're not here to fight the best guys in the world and make the most money and make the biggest noise? And I'm not one of those dudes that's obsessed with being like, I have to be a world champion. Obviously, that's a goal, but I want to make money. I want to put on fights that people remember, and I want a number next to my name. You know, I want to be able to bid for a better contract. I want all these things that come with beating ranked guys. Like, I'm not here to fight some dude that no one knows.
I think this is definitely a guy that people know and he's ranked. But when you talk about putting on exciting fights, is he the right guy for that? Because, you know, when Hakran beats, I mean, sometimes it's just a grinding, kind of boring fight.
Right, yeah. I've seen him in fights. If you let him clamp onto you, he's going to drag you down and he's going to make you probably pretty miserable and he's going to grind to a decision. But look at the Cub fight. I mean, if you can stop his shot and you hit him a couple times, like, he's not, like, Hakran's tough. Like, he'll stand and trade with you. You know, he's from Nova, and they're a tough camp. Like, those dudes aren't punks. Like, if you sock him, he's going to plant his feet and try to sock you back, and that's what I'm looking to do, you know? I'm looking to punch him right in his face and see what he has back, you know? And I just feel good. Like, I'm ready for a fight, like, honestly. I don't think he's going to I think he'll probably shoot early. I think once I stop a few of his shots, that'll stop, and he'll go back to trying to chop my leg legs down. And once you stop that with a few checks, it'll turn into a fist fight. And
that's awesome.
That's what I'm looking forward to.
You talked about your training. Give me the feel. What's the mood like around Team Alpha Male right now? It seems like kind of just such a – it's been like a transitionary period, you know, year. You're getting your guys that were fighters and now coaches, you know, Uriah's kind of dwindling down. I mean, he said that he's kind of thinking about it. What's the mood like around that? What's the feel?
Dude, the energy's crazy. Like, it's probably the best the gym's ever been. I mean, it's been a transitionary period, but now we're all pretty locked in. We all kind of have our roles, and it's been great, man. I mean, yeah, Buckles is killing it as a head coach. Castillo is the wrestling coach. Holdsworth is the jiu-jitsu coach, and everything has just been fitting well. And you know, we've always been like this big dysfunctional family that we all love the shit out of each other, but it's been this big like dysfunctional family, like sitcom dynamic, and everyone has their roles, and everyone's roles have kind of changed, but they still fit. Like, it's just been perfect, man. I really love it. I love having those guys in my corner, and Cody and Paige have both just been killing it, so I'm excited to step up. Like, I think the whole cast of like the young Alpha Male guys carrying the team, I think I'm part of that, but I've sort of been inconsistent, and so I want to get in there and carry my weight, you know what I mean? I think it's, you know, Cody, Paige, Holdsworth, and myself, I think it's sort of our job right now. We have a couple other guys that are going to be in the UFC soon. We just got Alex Sandoval. We just got Josh Emmett. Sort of our job to carry the legacy on, you know, and so I want to do my part. I think I've been inconsistent. Even when I've lost, I mean, if you look at my losses, like, it's flying triangle, like, switch kick, like, even my losses, like, I put on exciting fights, but I want to start getting those wins consistently, like I did, you know, pre-UFC, and then I'm excited to go in and do that on a big stage, you know, against a good opponent.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was Andre Feely. He's in a tough spot, man, but I like the kid's attitude. I really do, man. Wish him all the best. Nothing against Hakan Diaz, but I want to see Touchy Feely do well. Had a chance to catch up with last call, Danny Castillo. He's got an interesting story. He's going through some issues right now. He had someone dealing with some identity theft right now, man. Crazy. Dude had a wild story. I think he's still working through it, so maybe once he gets all through the problems, cause I think he's still got some issues, but once he gets it all worked out, maybe we can jump on the air with him and get him to tell us about it, because sound like an absolute pain in the ass having to deal with all that. Okay, listen, UFC Fight Night 96, Saturday night, UFC Fight Pass, Fox Sports 2, Fox Sports 1. You know, not the greatest card ever, especially with all these big fights coming up. I mean, we're going to go out to Manchester next week, and of course we got New York, that show's insane, man. The addition of Conor and Eddie Alvarez, how exciting was that, man? Crazy that, you know, people could say this fight lineup for UFC 205 doesn't look that great, and then you add one fight with Conor McGregor and Eddie Alvarez, and now people are saying it may be the greatest of all time, man. That's crazy. I mean, the lineup was so good already, but everybody said maybe it's falling short of what should be at Madison Square Garden, but I'll tell you what, man, I cannot wait for that card. Let's all knock on wood, hope the injury bug doesn't jump in and knock that card out, because if that thing stays together, holy Christ, that's a great lineup. This week, not quite so great, but the main event, John Lineker versus Jon Dodson, fantastic fight there, man. I really love this fight. I said it in my staff picks, man, I'm kind of leaning towards the speed of Jon Dodson, man. That guy is so damn fast. We were watching him in open workouts today. That little flip that he does, you know, where he does a little backflip off the cage, he did like four or five of them, just like nothing. It's not, you know, I thought that was something he had to be like hopped up on adrenaline and full of energy after a win to do. But like, nah, man, the dude just runs up walls and flips like it's no big deal. And just, God, and the grappling exchanges, these little slick transitions that he was doing, holy Christ, dude, he's so athletic. But, I mean, Lineker, God, I love watching that guy fight, man. The way he digs to the body, there is a sound that his shots make that's different. We've talked about it before, but it is really true. The sound that his punches make when they hit the body, ugh, like you can just feel the pain as you're sitting there from K-side. I don't think that always comes across on television. Like, it's brutal. Of course, Will Brooks and Alex Oliveira, very interesting fight there. And then, you know, it kind of drops off a little bit. Some injuries kind of ripped apart some fights. You know, Luis Smolka was supposed to fight Sergio Pettis. I think that was going to be a big fight in the flyweight division. I was looking forward to that one. And
It gets a little thin at the bottom, I'm not going to lie. Nate Marquardt, Tandem Recorder, UFC Fight Pass. That's intriguing in a lot of ways. The Magnificent One was here, you know, talking earlier about what a big fight that is for both those guys. I mean, really, really in need of a win. So, you know, listen, if this is one that you don't spend 6.5 hours watching, maybe you catch the highlights, DVR, I get it. I wouldn't blame you for that. It's a little, it's a, you know, it's a lot of MMA going on lately. And this isn't the fully stacked lineup. But, you know, we're going to do it, man. We're going to watch all of it, man. We're going to watch all of it. We're going to have full coverage of everything. And keep your fingers crossed. Everything goes good. We'll even throw a little and a half action from you. It might just be me. I might be rolling solo. We'll have to see if Morocco's down. If not, it might just be me rolling solo, which I hope just doesn't absolutely bore the shit out of you, because I don't know how long I can listen to my own voice. Hopefully you guys are okay with it. Listen, real quick, do me a favor. If you like what you're listening to, do me a favor. Go into iTunes. Rate it. Review it. Make sure you subscribe, of course. Rate it. Review it. Love reading those reviews, man. Love reading those reviews. They mean the world to me, dude. Positive or negative. I love reading it, man. I love reading it on the air, but I love just reading it and kind of getting the feedback. And, man, just like here in Portland this week, everybody that's come up and said what's up and said they love the podcast, dude, you have no idea how much that means to me. And I know it means a lot to Cold Coffee, too. Doesn't mean as much to him this weekend because he's chilling with his girl on the beach in California. So right now, he's probably just cussing me the fact that he's got to put this whole thing together as soon as I email everything over to him. So I better get that done quickly, because I think my man wants to spend time sipping some frosty beverages on the beach and not have to listen to my voice as he edits this podcast. So anyway, listen, yeah, so weird just kind of sitting in a house by myself, this Airbnb, chilling. The Airbnb that came stocked with PBR and Coors Light, though, I must say, felt pretty good about that. I almost just went and left a 5-star review before I did anything else, because what the hell else do you need? You stocked me with frosty beverages. You are obviously a fantastic Airbnb owner. So anyway, all right, UFC Fight Night 96, enough of me rambling. Let me just say, thanks for listening.